This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Doctors already know that a patient's level of income and education have strong ties to health and wellness. Poor people and minorities at all income levels have worse health outcomes than the general population. That's going to be a topic of conversation at this year's Minority Health Conference at UNC Chapel Hill, where the theme is economic mobility. It kicks off Friday, and joining me to talk about the state of minority health is William Sandy Darity. He's a professor of public policy, African American studies, and economics at Duke University, and one of the keynote speakers at this year's conference. Welcome back, Sandy. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Mei Chen, a PhD student and UNC at UNC Chapel Hill's Gilling School of Global Health Policy. She's co-chair of this year's conference. Hello, Mei.
Hi. Great to be here.
Sandy Darity, let's start with you. What do we know about the correlation between your economic status, minority status, and health outcomes?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. The traditional view of the relationship between people's socioeconomic status and their health outcomes is as socioeconomic status improves, health outcomes also improve. This is not consistently the case when we look at population groups who are confronted with higher degrees of discrimination and the like. So, for example, if we look at Black Americans and consider a disease like hypertension, actually, the incidence of the disease tends to rise as socioeconomic status goes up. And then, of course, if we think about the so-called Mexican paradox that involves the Mexican immigrant population, we find that low-income Mexican immigrants actually have better health outcomes in terms of something like infant mortality or infant well-being than Mexican Americans who have been here for multiple generations. And so there's some paradoxes that need to be explored and examined with some depth. And that's one of the issues that I'd like to try to explore at the talk that I'm going to give on Friday.
And yet, and as you said, it's complex and it needs exploration. But it is clear that there's a correlation and that health outcomes are, in general, for minority populations, apart from that first-generation Mexican, as you pointed out, not as good as the population in general. Do we know why? Do we know what's going on there?
Yeah, well, I think that there are two key factors. One is these communities typically do have less resources in general. In particular, if we were to look at wealth, we would find that there's a huge disparity between the wealth position of Latinos and Blacks in comparison with whites. But the other factor is, I think, the emotional psychological stressors that are associated with what we might call microaggressions. By a microaggression, I mean a form of indignity that does not necessarily cost somebody their life or limb, but it has a tremendous toll on their emotional and psychological well-being. And those types of stressors, actually, we now know, have tremendously adverse effects on people's health.
This could be happening in the workplace, so it might also explain how middle and upper income African Americans who are perhaps mixing in larger communities of white coworkers
That's
are experiencing
right.
that kind of thing.
That's right.
I wonder how this correlates at all with the famous Whitehall study done in Great Britain back in the 70s that surprised everybody because they thought there'd be a lockstep correlation between income and health outcomes, and they found it's not quite true. And as they really began to examine the data, they found that people who had more control within their workplace, supervisors at a lower income level, would do better in general and health than people who were paid more but had no control. They were simply worker bees at a higher level. And so the theory was that it's the amount of control that you feel in your workplace and in your home that really defines the outcomes more than simple income. And I don't know if that's all relevant or if there's any correlation here in the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. As Dr. Darity was talking about, there are multiple mechanisms through which social and economic factors influence health, including the impact it has on, your social and emotional state. Some research has shown that chronic stress in response to economic instability has been linked to compromised immune function, to hypertension, to higher risk of cardiovascular disease and poor mental health outcomes. So it's a very complex picture that we're talking about here.
Why did you choose economic mobility as the theme for this year's conference?
Yeah, so the reason we chose economic mobility was because, you know, we tend to talk about economic inequality and health as if they exist in separate silos. But the reality is that these two things are inextricably tied to one another, and they play out in unison in people's lives. You know, in the folks in public health call them the fundamental causes of disease, or the root conditions that affect multiple risk factors and multiple disease outcomes, and they continue to persist over time. And we specifically chose this theme because when the 2008 recession hit, you know, rates of unemployment and economic stability dropped to a level that have been unparalleled in the last 50 years. And we're starting to hear a lot of politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, talking about this idea of economic inequality. But what, you know, Elena and I noticed was that a lot of these discussions don't really they don't really talk about or don't acknowledge the disparities that existed even before the recession. Right. So some of the things that Dr. Darity was talking about and the role of the recession in widening those pre-existing gaps. So we chose this theme specifically to turn the spotlight back on these social and structural forces that drive health disparities, and also what can be done to, now that the country is in a stage of economic recovery, what can we do to increase mobility?
Well, and Sandy, I guess that brings us to something that you'd like to point out, the difference between wealth and income when we talk about health outcomes.
Yes. Yeah, so wealth is the difference between an individual or a household's assets and debts. It's a stock concept, so it constitutes the value of an individual's possessions, property, and the like, in contrast with income, which is a flow concept that's primarily dominated by people's earnings. So wealth actually constitutes your stock of resources that you can carry through time. It provides families with a higher level of security if they're confronted with emergencies like a health crisis or unemployment, which is something that has affected a large number of families in most recent years. It provides people with a greater degree of opportunity to participate in the political system and have influence in the political system. It gives them the opportunity to provide high-quality education for their children. So there's a tremendous set of advantages individuals have as a consequence of having greater wealth, and that's distinctive from income. And so so it's interesting that if we think about the usual claim that we make about what insulates people from the social problems that we're talking about, usually it's education that people say will be the insulating factor. But I became aware through my colleague Jay Pearson that we don't observe necessarily improved health outcomes for diseases like hypertension or diabetes as black folks become better educated. And I think that that's reflective of a range or a layer of inequalities. So in addition, for example, the unemployment rate for blacks who have some college education actually is higher than the unemployment rate for whites who never completed high school. Mm-hmm. And the level of wealth of whites who never finished high school is higher than the level of wealth for blacks who actually have completed college. And so if we take unemployment, we take wealth, we take health outcomes, we find that there's a very different payoff associated with educational attainment, and that in some ways wealth has to be more protective. Yeah. Than educational attainment.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, if you talk about a sudden emergency, if I own a house and two cars and have a stock portfolio and I suddenly have to stop working, or there's a sudden illness that costs me a lot of money outside of even what insurance might cover, I'm somewhat comforted by the fact that I have these assets. I've got the house, I've got the car, there's the 401k, we could tap into it if we need to. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, on top of the fact that you can, if your car breaks down, you don't have the money to pay for that, then if I become sick and have to take three buses to get to the doctor to find out that the biopsy was positive and I may be laid up for 3 months, then the stressors become extreme. And yeah. So that's why economic mobility. But again, taking a look just in the last segment, talking about predatory lending, again, keeping people in a cycle of poverty, historic reasons, redlining that has kept people of color, African Americans, from building wealth in this country. And now, you know, you try to catch up. When you talk about economic mobility, May, what do you mean in this context? How does it even what does it look like to you?
Well, so, I mean, economic mobility traditionally is viewed as, you know, Sandy was talking about the ways in which we are able to accumulate wealth. So, being educational attainment, secure employment, the ability to own your own home. These are the things that traditionally are seen as the avenues that we can take to gain mobility and to improve our economic and social status. But the truth is that a lot of these things are not equally accessible. And even when you do obtain these things, oftentimes it's not enough to counteract the effects of racism and discrimination that are occurring. So as you mentioned, redlining, you know, this idea that you can own your own home is believed to increase your status, but at the same time, you know, these are the things you're not, you know, these are the things that people are actually not, you know, they're, it's
don't
actually,
have access
exactly,
to it.
Yeah,
then,
exactly.
And historically have it, and that puts you way behind if you can't build one mm-hmm. house on another. Take a look, you know, one generation to the next, what happens when your family owned a house and now you build on that. If that didn't happen, mm-hmm. you're always catching up, and things did get worse after 2008. The gap was closing somewhat, was it, Sandy, before then or not?
And no, not really. It was relatively stable. Mm. But if we go to 2007, which is the eve of the Great Recession, we find that black households had about 11 cents in net worth for every dollar that white households had. But by 2011, that ratio had dropped to 6 cents per every dollar. I would like to add in commenting on May's observation that the major source of wealth is actually inheritances and gifts. Mm-hmm. And these are sources of wealth that have nothing to do with merit. They have a lot to do with the family that you happen to be born into. And so to the extent that that's the case, we can't correct these kinds of distributional imbalances merely by having people try to save more individually or get more education. Now, I want to be clear. I'm definitely a fan of educational mm-hmm. attainment, but I'm saying it does not buy everything that we typically assume it does.
Well, I wonder which of these economic factors then we should focus on, given the historical impact. I mean, again, if inheritance is the primary source of wealth, I mean, you can imagine if I had started a business in, oh, say, 1930, and I was white in North Carolina, I'd have a big advantage because I wouldn't have to compete against the entire African-American. That's 20% of the population. So my store would do well, and I could pass that on to my children, and they could attain the highest levels of power in the state or whatever. So you can imagine how this plays makes a difference. So then what areas should we be focusing on today? Should we be addressing those, or how do you build wealth in this environment, May?
I mean, that's a tough question. That's a loaded question.
Well, let me ask you too. Let me ask you another fact, more objectively about these factors and whether or not gender plays a role, and there are gender distinctions or age. Is there a difference with adolescents and adults in terms of how the health outcomes?
Yeah, sure. Actually, so my own research focuses on adolescent health risk behaviors, and certainly there are, you know, we're facing one of the first generations that has to deal with the impact of the recession during a critical moment in their development. And the long-term impact that this may have remains to be seen. Certainly, so that's certainly true. There are a number of interesting findings that have recently come out about how the recession has impacted young adults. These health outcomes still are contingent on things like your race, your level of education, and your family's financial status, as Dr. Darity mentioned. So certainly it's a, you know, multifaceted.
Do you know about distinctions in gender? Do men or women fare better in terms of health outcomes? And then if we break it down according to minority status or income?
It depends on the disease. So in general, women have higher rates of obesity than men. And correspondingly may have a higher incidence of diabetes. I'm not certain about that. But I think men actually have a higher incidence of hypertension than women. Obviously, certain kinds of cancers only exclusively occur in particular genders. So prostate cancer is a male disease. Breast cancer is overwhelmingly a female disease, although there are occasionally men who develop breast cancer. So I think it depends on the disease how these gender differences actually play out.
We're talking about minority health outcomes today on The State of Things. Sandy Darity, has the Affordable Care Act had any impact on this? Is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. My speculation is that the Affordable Care Act has to be better than the conditions that existed beforehand, although there are reports of individuals who are confronted with higher cost of health care as a consequence of the introduction of the Affordable Care Act. I think ideally if we had a single payer system, that would be the way to go. But it's not the case. And again, I think we really do have to address these high levels of wealth inequality. And I guess because I'm a little bit older and grayer, I'm willing to try to address loaded questions. Mm-hmm. And I actually have proposed on a number of occasions a strategy for addressing wealth inequality, which is something that I've called the baby bonds proposal. Literally, it is not a bond. It's an endowment or a trust that would be given to each newborn infant, and the amounts would be contingent upon their parents' wealth position. So I say in my stump speech that if Oprah Winfrey had a new child, we would give that child a $50 endowment. But for families whose children are born at the lower end of the wealth distribution, we would give them $50,000 to $60,000 in endowment. And this would be something that would be accessible when they reach adulthood at 18 years of age.
Yeah. And the question was loaded with example. I mean, the idea is it's absolutely true that people have benefited by certain inequalities that were institutionalized in law. And that's the point of that, is to say that you have to think back to a time when people were disadvantaged by law.
Yes.
And that means other people were advantaged.
That's right.
And now have built on that. If inheritance is the primary source of wealth, then you got that because half of the 20% of the population couldn't compete.
Yeah.
That's an important factor. And so in terms of that proposal that you just laid out, Sandy, and I know you've talked about it before, I mean, it really does work. It has some economic outcomes for all of us because there's a cost to all of us in not addressing these disparities, isn't there?
Yes. Yes. I mean, essentially, we are cordoning off large segments of our population to not have the opportunity to fully develop their talents and abilities and contribute to our society.
So, May, and we did talk a little bit about age differences. What about adolescence and sort of teen behavior? Is that part of what you're looking at? And, mm-hmm. and will that be a topic at this conference?
So it will be highlighted in a couple of the breakout sessions at the conference, especially with regard to educational attainment. But in terms of health behaviors, we know that economic factors play a huge role in adolescent health outcomes. And, without studying the recession in particular, the event that arguably is the single greatest indicator of financial instability in several generations, we can't fully understand the developmental course of this generation. And so, even in my own research, which is focused on behaviors such as dating violence and substance use, we found that family financial instability is linked to higher use of dating violence amongst teens. And in addition to being a serious consequence in itself, it can also set the stage for later intimate partner violence in life. Similar work has also been shown that experiencing multiple stressors is related to greater teen substance use, which, related to that, it's early onset of substance use has directly been associated with greater likelihood of developing addiction problems in adulthood. So we have these, very complex trajectories that can be exacerbated by the recession and sort of the events that happened during this developmental period.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. May Chen is a PhD candidate at UNC's Chapel Hill's Gilling School of Global Public Health. Sandy Darity, a professor of public policy, African American Studies, and Economics at Duke. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
There's more on the topic and on the conference at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, an art exhibit about power and the abuse of the criminal justice system. Stay tuned.